I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 590. I don't know what I saw, but here's what I think I saw. This is Electric Sisterhood, home of the original.
The fucking original.
Girl gaming, tech gadget, and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Welcome to a brand new episode of our weekly podcast, Panda.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm back and better than ever.
Yes, you is. I'm still waiting on my wine.
I'm swimming in it over here, so.
I know. I'm very jealous.
Don't be. I'm glad
you had a good vacation. I had a good week. I mean, we've got a lot of E3 stuff to talk about here on the podcast.
I had to do a lot of catching up because obviously coming off of a vacay where yes. I didn't have a lot of internet connections. I didn't see a lot.
And you need to put in work. Stuff on the site. Gotta do it. So many things. Like, so many things for you to talk about.
I know. They catered a lot to me out of this E3 from the research that I was doing. Like, there's a lot of things where I'm like, I'm gonna have no money this month. Or this month.
I'm just going to be broke from here to here. And then I'm also going to be broke from here to here.
So.
But, like, it seemed to me overall that, like, all the big genres have at least a game, if not more than a game.
If not two.
Right. That's coming new. And so, you know, like I said before, it's a great time to be a gamer. It really is. I'm going to jump right into E3 stuff. You know, if you are a fan of our Facebook page or you've checked out our website, you've probably already seen my media briefing recap video. Thank you so much for watching that and sharing it. Keep sharing it. Let's get them views for sure. But, you know, the briefings were really interesting. But really spending time this week watching some of the trailers and the gameplay trailers for some of the games that they talked about and also subsequent announcements that, you know, weren't big media briefing day announcements, I really want to get into. And so that's probably what we're going to be focused on for the next couple of weeks here on the podcast as well as on the site. So be prepared for that. But I think today I kind of want, at least for me, I want to focus on some, like, big things for me personally.
Okay.
That I'm very excited about. I know you have some stuff that you want to talk about. So this is going to be just a big old games podcast episode. Just so you know. I promise I'll bring the anime back soon. Because I've been watching, like, a ridiculous amount of anime right now. But first big one for me, I gotta say, I'm so ready for Beyond Good and Evil 2.
I'm surprised that I didn't get a call from you while I was away when they announced that. Because I was like, I was kind of waiting for my phone to, like, ring.
I really wanted to text you and be like, yes, Jesus.
Like, I was waiting for you and I was also waiting for, like, KBD.
I will be honest. So at the time that the UB media briefing was going off, my team was having a team meeting. I'd actually taken the day off so that I could watch the briefings on Monday, which my team and my boss at my day job thought was the most hysterical thing on the planet. And I was like, look, you're not a fan if you're not willing to sacrifice a vacation day to enjoy your shit.
Right. That's absolutely 100% right.
I'm like, so I'm taking a staycation day and I'm going to nerd out and enjoy my nerdery. And so I was watching the briefing just because I could not reliably with my setup stream and have my reaction to the video playing of the stream of the briefing. My poor Mac Mini, she's fairly powerful, but she's just not quite powerful enough to do that without some lag on my great connection. So I was like, you know, on Monday, I'm just going to watch these briefings, and then I'm going to do a reaction video after I've watched them, because I really wanted to have good video, right?
Right.
And so I was watching the UB briefing, and, you know, I make no bones about it. I am a Yubi fan. I really like almost all of their franchises in one way or another. Like, I'm really excited for Skull and Bones now. And
really?
You know, I got to play an early build of it. And the build that we were playing, it was pretty. But, like, it wasn't really easy to communicate what I wanted, like, my support team memberships to do. And so I like the idea of, like, pillaging and looting ships and going out. Like, I loved the ship battles in Black Flag. So it felt just like the game itself was just that part of Black Flag, which I enjoyed. But I was like, I don't know that I would enjoy this for more than, like, 20 minutes. So maybe a couple battles and I'd be done with it. And I was like, nah, that's okay. Then Sea of Thieves came out, and I love Rare. I thought Sea of Thieves was going to be a super, super fun game. And for me personally, it just really wasn't. And so I was kind of like, maybe nobody's really cracked the nut on pirate games yet. You know, like, outside of Monkey Island and Black Flag, like, when I think about pirate games that I have played, I'm not really, like, overwhelmed and, like, super pumped. But I liked the way that I could customize my ship and that I needed to customize my ship based off of the target that I have. Because, like, if I'm going up against a big iron-class bruiser of a ship, I need to be able to ram the bejesus out of that thing.
Right.
So I better have a really, really strong masthead on my ship so we can land that blow. I better reinforce, you know, the bow so we could take some hits.
Right.
You know, I better have that speed so I can get up to ramming speed pretty quickly. So there's more strategy in how my ship looks and not just, ooh, here's a pretty aesthetic and let me waste some in-game currency on it that I have to grind to get and it's actually not going to do anything for me. There's none of that.
Except make me look good when I get rammed.
Right. You know, like, I don't like aesthetics just for aesthetics' sake.
I mean, I do sometimes. Like, sometimes you just want something to look good. But you want it to be fully functional and effective and efficient.
But I want my aesthetics to be functional. I don't want to just, you know, spend 700 whatever dollars, points, drachma, whatever in the game to get a new piece of armor and it doesn't affect my player other than now they're shiny.
Right.
Not in an action game.
Gotta have some stat boosts.
Right. I gotta get some stats out of it.
Gotta make you run faster and jump higher. I get it.
Right. In a fighting game, a costume change doesn't have to have any meaning other than to help me better identify my character on the screen. That's fine. But in my RPGs and my character focus games, I want if there are things that I have to go out and get and spend any kind of in-game currency on them, I want them to matter. Otherwise, I don't then care about your entire aesthetic leg of your game if it doesn't affect my player or my party in some way. Then I'm not going to spend time grinding to get them because they don't matter. And I like in Skull and Bones that everything you do to your ship matters. You need to make sure that you're outfitting the right cannons for the way that you're going to play and also for the enemies you're going to go after. If you're going after fast-moving ships, you better have a cannon that can reload faster. Yeah, it's probably not going to do as much damage, but you can get shots off faster, which means over time you can apply more damage. So your DPS over time actually will work in your favor versus having a very slow, big-hit cannon. Because they're probably going to be out of the way by the time that you've, you know, aimed and actually got it to fire. They're probably not actually in the range anymore, and so you're going to miss more of those shots. So I like that there is that strategy level to the game, and that it is incorporated heavily in the game. And I like the fact that, you know, you are, you know, living an actual pirate's life. So you're running around looting ships. Get your monies up.
Get it.
Get fat stacks.
Sing them shanties.
Get your shanty on, you know, and
get your pillage on.
What I really like is that if you want it to be, it can be a single player focus. Because that was my concern, really, of E3, especially after the news of the changes to Call of Duty Black Ops 4, and even after the announcement of the Season Pass, which I don't even know why they're calling it a season pass, because if you don't get it, the game is ultimately not playable for you.
So then it's the game?
They're basically forcing you to buy it. It's like, so you can choose not to get this season's pass, but if you do, like, you're pretty much going to be wrecked and you're not going to actually be able to do anything except for, like, these two modes of the game. So we recommend, if you actually want to play our game, that you buy the game, and also it's ridiculously priced season's pass.
That is some bullshit.
Yep, so I was just like, and you cut off, Black Ops. You cut off.
You're done.
You're done. You're done. We're done here. You can move on. Yeah, it was so bad it brought my Bostonian out. So I really am interested in Skull and Bones. It's not, like, pre-order for me interested, but I definitely want to learn more about the game. So I've been watching some more of the trailers that they released, and it just looks like what I wish Sea of Thieves could have been for the single-player experience.
Mm-hmm.
Which it doesn't have one. I wish that it did. I probably would have played it more, but I am looking forward to seeing how Skull and Bones develops as it moves forward. And it, you know, it might be a game that I pick up now, actually, whereas before it wasn't really on my radar. But Beyond Good and Evil 2,
like, you,
when I saw Jade, I was...
Did you feel right with the world?
I did. Like, I know it sounds silly, but I really did. I've talked about this game incessantly over the years on the podcast. It's one of my all-time favorite games. I would say that Beyond Good and Evil is definitely in my top five games of all time. Exactly where it sits, I'm not sure, because depending upon when you catch me in the week, it's either my number three game or my number two game of all time.
Wait, what's your number one game of all time?
So, my number one game of all time...
Like, no matter what, like, even, like, on your deathbed, if the system still worked or there was a really good emulation of it, what is that game that you'll go back to?
It's Burger Time. And it's because Burger Time is a game that made me fall in love with video games.
Mm.
So, okay. Like, it was the first game that I got competitive with myself. It was the first game where I enjoyed solving the puzzle and trying to beat my personal best, and if I could get a second player, it was even better, and I played that on the Intellivision. So Burger Time will always be my number one game of all time, because simply it's the game that made me a gamer.
Okay.
Right. And Intellivision is coming back now. I see you, Tommy Tallarico. So I'm excited and hopeful that through, you know, like, maybe a greatest hits pack or something that's going to come back in the Intellivision life, that my Intellivision Burger Time experience will come back, and I'll be able to do that, because, like, the nostalgia for that will be, like, through the roof. I'm not going to lie. I'll probably cry, because that is just such a pivotal moment for me in my development as just a person, because, like, that's when I started to become really interested in game mechanics and puzzle solving, and then I wanted to play more games like that, and so Burger Time on the Intellivision is what really made me want to focus on console gaming, because we didn't have an Atari and we didn't have Atari money, so that was, like, never going to happen.
Nope.
And none of my friends close to me for really up until I got into junior high had a game system. But because I loved Burger Time and that experience so much on the Intellivision, it's what prompted our parents to get a NES system in, and then, you know, I played Duck Hunt, like, nonstop.
Nobody's business.
Like, you know, so that combination Super Mario Brothers Duck Hunt cartridge
got a lot of wear and tear.
It's also in my top five because, again, the nostalgia, but it's also where, like, my being a gamer was, like, confirmed, because that after that, you couldn't keep me off a console, and you couldn't keep me off of playing games or going to the arcade. And so after playing that in those, like, that's when I became, like, an arcade junkie. And so anytime that I could get our parents to take me to the Willows or to take me to Cambridge to go to the arcade, like, whatever chores I had to do,
you
whatever grades I had to get, we got them. And then from there, just more consoles came in. So those are two big ones for me because they're part of my journey to being part of this community, you know. And then there are other games that come in and out. You know, I would definitely say that Assassin's Creed Revelations Pops probably sits at, like, my number five game. Gears of War is in my top five for sure. And then hovering, like, outside of my top five, Splinter Cell, Sam Fisher is bae. That's up there for sure. Rock Band.
I'm surprised Rock Band's not hot farther because it, you know, it blends two things that you really are passionate about, which
it, it hovers outside of my game. Top five, but definitely isn't in the top five.
I mean, I feel like if this was a path like in a like if you were taking a hike, like in a forest, which
Rock Band is definitely in my strong six, it's a path that you've walked
and you walk right. with a lot of
and
love.
I love that path. And I really wish it would come back in a strong way because, I do love Rock Band. I love the community vibe of it. I love being able to explore music in a new way and to participate in songs that I love. That's really the main reason that I love Rock Band. But it's like strong six. And then there's just stuff that hovers around it. Again, just depending upon when you talk to me. You know, Castlevania's in there.
So.
Castlevania, I'd probably put it like a nine. But anyway, I cannot wait for Beyond Good and Evil 2. I love the vibe. I love the character design. I'm loving everything I'm seeing from UB right now on Beyond Good and Evil 2. And I'm just excited to have another game that has a smart, strong female lead that is just simply badass.
Like you.
And that's the reason why you love the characters, because she's badass. And not because she has a big ass. It's okay if she has a big ass, but that shouldn't just be the only reason why I love her or feel for her. And so I'm very excited for Jade to come back and to be at the helm of her pixels again. So I thank Yubi for not abandoning this particular project, because it would be easy to do, for sure. But I'm going to shut up for a minute and let you talk about some stuff, too. Because I literally could go on for hours about everything at E3, but I'm going to shut up for a minute.
So, I mean, I will touch briefly on a couple of things that they showed off at E3 that, I mean, I'm not too surprised to hear about some of them coming through now. So, I mean, case in point, because, you know, me and my survival horror have always been super, super close. Like, we're super besties who,
y'all may, super
have, who may have thought about dating back in college but didn't have that sexy face.
Because you didn't want to ruin the friendship.
I didn't want to ruin the friendship. I think my first real big push for survival horror, like, being a genre that I care about and I like, was Resident Evil. And we know how I felt about Resident Evil 7 and how... Yes. How great of a reboot that was for the franchise, and for them to go back and now go, you know what? Like, let's take Resident Evil 2, let's give it a proper makeover, and let's bring it back. And I heard that this came out of the news of E3, and they were showing off Resident Evil 2 in the engine that they did 7 in, and yes. Oh my fucking god.
Yeah, I'm still not gonna touch it.
I feel like in my life, like, like when you played Resident Evil 2 back then, like the way that it looks now is how I feel. My nostalgia makes me see it, even though that's
like a lot of people probably that's the case.
Like, it just looks like, hey, darkness, my old friend, welcome back. Like, I'll meet you as a friend this time, Death. And you there's just this profound respect, and I'm just like, yes, I'm glad that we're going back to this one, because, like, for me, and I mean, don't get me wrong, like, Resident Evil 1 definitely has its place in my heart, but I felt like 2 for me was like, oh shit, like, because I played this with Hot Mess, like, through the hours of the night, like, you felt connected to Leon Kennedy and Claire Redfield, and, like, you felt their plight a little bit more than, like, from the standard game, or at least, in my opinion, that's where it kind of came from. And, like, if they're gonna go this far back, like, I'd love to even see them take a stab at refreshing 1, and maybe even possibly 3, and cleaning up some of the plot on that. But hey, like, not part of that team.
Yeah. Like, I would not expect plot cleanup on 3.
Hey, we could get a remastered, which is also seen as a retcon, so we could fix some plot holes there. That'd be nice. You know? Because then we could lead into 4 with all of the prestige. Like, and I wish. It won't happen, because 4 is the turning point, really. for Resident Evil. But I'm glad to see them, like, going back, finding a nostalgic gem and giving it, like, the Fox Phoenix rebirth from the flames. Oh, but we're not changing the story. We're just giving it an upgrade, and look at how awesome this is.
So why two for you? Like, what...
So
for you playing it, what is it about Resident Evil 2 that just... Through all the games, because there's a lot in the franchise.
There's a lot. Well, because very much like with you in comics, like, you know, depending on what lane, like what canon you decide to accept as your personal savior, like Jesus.
Mm-hmm. it's Cassandra Cain. Continue.
Right, exactly. Like, some people would argue that she's not the best Batgirl, and that canon is, you know, that storyline's not canon, and, like, people will defend it till the day that they die.
And people are assholes.
I was gonna say those people are wrong, but...
And they're also wrong.
But that's their opinion, and they're allowed to have it.
Absolutely.
And I mean, I think...
You can totally be wrong all you want.
I think for me, the reason why Resident Evil 2 is so impactful to me... is because it was my first experience with Resident Evil. I didn't play one until after me and Hot Mess in our youth played through two.
And then, in your youth.
Well, yeah, because like we were like young teenagers then. I want to say like 13, maybe.
Oh, do you remember 13, 14?
No. No. Or correction, I mean, I'm assuming I'm in the young teens, but, like, it's funny, because in terms of the memory, like, I remember us turning the game room into pretty much, like, a giant bed on the floor with pillows and comforters everywhere, and, like, the TV pretty much on the ground so that we didn't have to look up and hurt our necks. Like, we converted the room into our game hut. And, like, I think I had to have been about 13 or 14 years old. So this was a while ago. This was, like, 20-odd years ago, actually. And it's been that long. But I just remember, like, getting home from school, doing the homework, and being a hot mess. Mom got pizza. Ash mom got us pizza, so you know what we're doing, right? We're hitting up Chapter 5 in RE2 tonight. Who's starting? And, like, and we'd play through the night and then be wrecked for school the next day. And... You know, some people would be like, that was too much gaming. But, like, I remember that being, like, the most exciting mm-hmm. thing to look forward to in the day.
Yeah.
So, and granted, once we were done with that, like, he's like, I've got one. And I'm like, let's go back. I'm like, I've heard about one. Like, clearly, you know, it was so good it got a sequel, which is what we're playing. But let's go back. Let me see what's going on with that. And, I mean, I enjoyed one also. But I think because this was my introductory, like, it just sits on a pedestal a little bit higher than one.
Right.
And then I played three and said, what the fuck is this? Why did we make this all about Jill?
Why did we do this?
Jill was in one and she almost got flattened, and I know she's a badass, but she's in a tube top and a skirt fighting Nemesis. Like, where'd her pants go? Like, she's a decorated military, she should have pants. This is not, you know, and I know it was a cash grab, and, you know, they wanted to make Jill, like, the sexy one, and, like, all that shit. Like, I get it.
I will not ever dissuade, I don't know, that's not the word. I will not ever be, like, offhanded with something just because it's a cash grab. If up front you're honest with this a cash grab.
Right.
Like, that's fine.
But that's not exactly what they did.
Get some money. Go ahead and get some money. Just make it fun for me to give you the money.
So that was one big nugget that I was like, yeah, I'm glad to see that getting its revival. And then, you know, I mean, I could talk about Death Stranding until the day I die.
Hold that, because that's going to be our blurt of a feather.
Because, okay, well then I'll divert a little bit.
Hold.
So From Software, who seems to have several games in the pipeline that they were talking about out of this E3, which, I mean, From Software, every time you show up, I'm like, all right, I'm like, how angry am I going to get at life today?
Right, because how much money am I about to give
you? And I was like, are we getting Bloodborne 2? Are we ready for that yet? I don't know.
I don't think we are. I think we're another year away from another
Bloodborne. I would surmise that they're working on Bloodborne 2, but they're not ready to show us anything just yet. So, but they're like, but don't think we're not doing stuff, because here's this other stuff that we're doing. So there was a game that they mentioned that I was like, yay, I'm very invested in this. I want to try this game out, until I realized it's VR. And I was like,
so what's the game?
So I'm going to butcher its name. Dara Scene. I think it's Dara Scene. But anyway, it's a virtual reality take on like a classic point and click adventure game out of From Software, which does not sound like something From Software would even remotely be interested in doing.
Right.
So I'm kind of glad to see them getting away from the gruelingly bad, dark, not bad, but cruelingly vicious, brutal reality, and like are spreading their wings a little bit. And from what I've seen about the game, it happens in this secluded boarding school where there's only about 6 kids in this massive building, and one of the children encounters, or rather there's an entity in the building. And I think it's kind of like a ghost or a fairy. I've seen people interpret it 2 different ways. And the character, you are playing this entity that I guess one of the children has, like, summoned. And it is your job to convince the other kids and other people in this building that you exist. And I'm really kind of intrigued by that because, one, in this world, one, I believe in ghosts. I believe in spiritual energy, and mm-hmm. I believe in things.
I do believe in spooks. I do.
And I sometimes, I believe that, you know, sometimes things shift in your house, not just because they were shoddily put on your wall, but sometimes that something has moved it or is trying to get your attention, and whether you are sensitive enough to that, well, I mean, that's just, you know, you. So for me, like, I would want to play this game because, one, I feel when I die, I'm going to be a ghost, and I'm going to fuck shit up because I just want to. I want to prove myself right in the afterlife by haunting children. But I feel like this story is going to have a really, like, I don't want to say that this is going to be, like, a dark story, but I definitely think that there's going to be some, like, bionically gray occurrences that happen that you will cause in this world that will potentially frighten and or spook, you know, the children in this game. And I mean, I feel like that's just something very real. I think some people have had instances of things like this happening to them and them not really being able to put something, like attaching it to something tangible or factually accurate. But I'm excited for it. And I mean, this is From Software that we're talking about. So like, I feel like we're going to get very classic muted gray sepia tones. I don't think we're going to get a lot of backstory because they tend to like to hide that in a lot of text, which I mean, I'm not against, but I'm intrigued to see this shift in direction for them in terms of narrative and visual. So, like, as soon as I saw that, I'm like, oh, I may have to find a way to get over my motion sickness to be able to play this, because I feel like there's a narrative here that I'm going to want to process and digest. So, big ups to you, From Software. Like, thank you for taking the time to go, you know, we could just make another Bloodborne, or we could wait and give them something else. And if this doesn't work, when we release Bloodborne 2, people's pants will just drop. Like the New Year's Eve ball. It will just happen. So that was one that I was like, ooh, I'm really intrigued about that one. Then, surprisingly enough, since you'd mentioned Gears a little bit ago, I heard that it's getting an RTS.
Yes.
And I saw a little bit of that, and I know it's a prequel to the events of the first game. Granted, I think it's done in the style or in the same engine as the current one, so it's going to have a cleaner feel. And I actually feel like this is about the time that we should see the emergence of RTSs again, because I think with Mario coming out with, you know, the Rabbids crossover, that it really mm-hmm. brought a cleaner approach to RTS back to the forefront and clearly showing that, like, it is a good game and people do find ways to find it enjoyable. And I mean, and I say this as someone who hated RTS games. Because one, yeah, real-time strategy. I don't usually have a strategy. I just want to make it. And I'll do whatever I have to do to make it. But, like, I'm not usually the kind to think 3 or 4 steps ahead. And, you know, RTSs are all about planning out everything you're doing in the space. And I mean, one, if they're going to make... I think from the clips and stuff that I saw about that gameplay is that they're clearly going to make the boss battles and stuff like that feel very much like you something you'd encounter in that universe, in the Gears universe. And, like, I'm kind of feeling it, like, on a low-key way. Now, granted, I mean, with, you know, Gears 5.
I mean, so let me just go ahead and say, like, right now, you are playing Gears 5 with me.
Am I?
Let me just say that now. So know that you're buying the game.
I'm gonna play it with you and my husband. Playing it. I'm gonna play with you and my husband and
right.
my friends.
Yes. We will squad up.
We'll 4 deep. We'll 4 deep this bitch.
Because I am so fucking ready for Gears 5. Like I said, Gears is in my top 5. Which, you know, if you had asked me before it came out if a game like that would ever be in my top 5, I would slap you across the face and ask you, who are you? And obviously you're not my friend, so how did you get in my house? I love the franchise. I love the story. I love everything that the Coalition is doing with it, with the franchise. And I'm excited. We've basically, it appears, are going to be playing a female lead in the game. And I love that, you know, Gears has always made their women strong. So that has always, you know, kept a warm spot in the subcockle area of my heart. I just can't wait to play Gears 5. Like, I'm ready for it now. I think it's because I really have not really had a good cover-based shooter experience in a while. I'm not consistently able to get a good team together for Siege of people that I actually want to play with. Who are not douchebags to me in some way, shape, or form, usually in chat. So I don't really get to play a lot of Rainbow Six Siege, which really sucks because I love the game. And I do have a lot of friends that play Gears. So I have a community I can go to that I can comfortably be with and play with. So I'm very excited about that. But I'm ready for more Marcus. I'm ready to get deeper into this story and understand what's going on with these humans and the Lambit. I need to know what's going on with the Lambic Queen. I need to understand the connection with her and this chick. Like, I need to change some more things in half.
Okay. And then another one that I'm kind of, it's weird because I don't feel like I'm rushing to chomp at the bit for it, but I'm intrigued enough to want to talk about it a little bit, and I'm talking about Anthem.
Because, yeah, I mean, go ahead, girl.
I feel like we have seen a whole lot of games come out of the woodwork since the, you know, the floodgates of Destiny opening up, you know, these cooperative shooters that we're getting. And I feel like we saw a whole bunch of them come out after Destiny, and I mean Destiny 2 and all of that. And when Anthem came out, I know a lot of people were like, oh, you know, EA and BioWare, you know, taking on this project and, like, they're just gonna rip off Destiny and, like, it may not succeed. And I mean, I actually kind of feel like there's a few other elements of other games that I've seen in Anthem. Look, a little bit.
Let's be real about Anthem for a hot second, and let's be real about this genre for a hot second. Destiny, when it dropped, everybody was like, holy shit, because frankly, you hadn't had a new Halo game in a long period of time. And so there was the PvE, PvP shooter, sci-fi space left wide open, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
And so Destiny came in from the team that originally created Halo, and everybody lost their goddamn minds. And it looked great, and it ran well. But after people got into it, realized it's kind of repetitive. And the Bungie team had a really hard time balancing PvP across the board. It took them a little while to get into the groove and to get, you know, even their expansions and the amount of things that they were bringing into the game when they did expansions right. But they finally got the rhythm down. They got the balance of story and balance of gameplay, I think, better perfected for them in Destiny 2. The problem was, but by the time that Destiny 2 had come out, everybody had learned the lessons that Bungie should have learned. And you had Titanfall, and then Titanfall Corrected, Titanfall 2 drop. Okay, you had, to be fair, a subpar Mass Effect Andromeda, the sci-fi shooter space, you know, was starting to get filled again. And now people were really critiquing the gameplay and the character development and the actual story that they were running through and how heavily things were really focused on loot boxes and DLC packs to complete the experience versus having a good complete experience to begin with, and add-ons really be treated like add-ons. And then you have EA and BioWare sit down and go, we're actually going to take a little time and try to get this right. Because I agree with you. If you look at Anthem, it's like Titanfall and Halo and Destiny had a baby.
True. Yes.
And I'm okay with that.
I think more games need to have sexual encounters with other games to make mixed games. I think it's time. I think we need to start putting more peanut butter in people's chocolate, and people need to start putting more chocolate in other people's peanut butter, if you know what I'm saying.
I think we need to throw some Nutella in the mix and just see what the hell happens.
Let's just... Yes, I agree. That's okay. But Nutella's a much better substitute than just chocolate
all right?
and peanut butter.
Like,
you're right.
You could put chocolate in your peanut butter, and you could put peanut butter in your chocolate. I'm just saying, what happens if you throw some Nutella in there? I'm not even telling you where to throw it. Okay? You don't gotta put it in the chocolate. You don't gotta put it in the peanut butter. I'm just saying, bring some Nutella to the table. Just see what happens.
I'm curious enough about it that I think that I'm not ready to just write it off.
I don't think that anyone should write Anthem off. I'm not completely on the Anthem hype train. I am looking forward to the game simply because I want to give BioWare another chance. And I know that they pulled a lot of people off of the Andromeda project to focus on the Anthem product. And the things that I've seen so far of Anthem, and it's one of the things that I really wish that I'd been able to be at E3 to get on one of the demo stations to play it, is that I don't know that Anthem is going to be for me. Because, you know, typically I love me some mech suit power games.
Yes, you do.
And I love me some mech suit animes. Looking at you, Big O. Missing you. Poor little out for the homie. Shh. It looks to be a really strong co-op game. And I like that. Because I think that small party co-op, again, is one of those things that it feels to me this E3 development houses were giving more love to. Like, they had walked away from it for a while and then remembered, oh, wait, we still have the ability to do this. And people seem to actually really like to squad up and go after stuff. We should build some things for that, as opposed to, like, everybody either just wants to play with themselves or, like, 49 other people. It just seemed like for a while the industry was focused on, I'm a lone wolf gamer. Or, I game with everybody, all kids in the pool, psh, Adult Swim, wah!
Either you're all in this together or you are a loner.
Right. And it just felt like everything was either single player or battle royale. Like, those are the only two choices ever. And I'm like, no, Couch Coop. You guys remember Couch Coop?
I do.
We do that. Okay.
Overcooked 2, y'all.
Yo, I'm so ready for Overcooked 2.
Overcooked 2,
I'm red dye.
Also, currently right now, just Shapes and Beats. Like.
Serious.
Like, come serious. On.
Just slow clap for just Shapes and Beats. Come on.
Shapes and Beats.
I don't think that Anthem should be written off yet. I do think, though, that as we get closer to the game coming out, I do think that it's very much going to be a game that appeals to that niche, again, Titanfall, Destiny kind of fan base, which is cool. I don't know that it's necessarily a game that's going to be approachable by the casual set, because I do think between, you know, mech maintenance and the skill trees, and then, you know, the actual battles of controlling flight, descent, fight, resource management, that's not something that you can just, like, pick up and play for 10 minutes or 20 minutes and be like, I can pick this up tomorrow and be good. You know what I mean? So I do think that it's going to speak to a very specific audience. But so far, it looks really fantastic.
So.
But again, I have been burned by trailers. We, as gamers, have been burned by trailers and then the actual gameplay not being anything like anything that's been presented in the trailer. So, like, I'm trying to, like, reserve my hype for things that, like, I'm putting money on already for the things that I've actually been able to see people that I know play those games. Here's one that I'm kind of surprised that you didn't put on the table.
Okay.
Kingdom Hearts 3. Oh, Lord. Okay, hold on. Let me get the popcorn. I'm going to sit back. Go ahead.
So, Square Enix. I have begun to lose so much, so much faith in you. And I have been an apologist and a lover of yours for years. And I think for me, like, I kind of took a step back from Kingdom Hearts 3 when they released the, when they announced the release date, because they had been swearing up and down that we were getting it in 2018.
Wait, now hold on. I'm gonna take a step, like, slightly in their defense. Square Enix just kept saying this year.
Okay, so this year. Okay, that's also okay, fine.
And now also, what I'll say is they didn't specify if it was a calendar year or fiscal year.
No. You could. No.
I'm just saying.
When you say this year, whatever year I'm in, this year.
I feel you.
Not that year. This year. And for them to be like, hey guys, it's coming out January 2019. And I was like,
it's like one more month.
But bro. If it wasn't ready for this year, you just do what Epic did and said, hey.
Hey,
we're not ready.
Look.
They've been saying it for years, so, like, they could have just said this again, and, like, we all rolled our eyes.
For 10 years that it's coming, okay? What's 29 more days?
No.
Sorry, 20.
No.
Okay, look.
They've been taking us through the ringer for quite some time. You didn't play 352 over 2 days.
I didn't. You're right.
You didn't play Dream Drop Distance and then try to piece this timeline.
You're right. I didn't play Remix 2.5. I didn't play
2.8. Remix 2.8? You didn't do that.
I didn't play Remix 2.851.
Like, no. You say this year, you mean this year. And if you don't, you say, I fucked up. Next year. But no, don't be like,
Right, but here's the thing, though. How pissed off would people be if they were like, we know we said this year, but it's actually going to be next year because it's coming out in January. And everybody, be real, everybody on the internet be like, Square Enix lied.
Hey,
Kingdom Hearts 3 isn't coming out until 2019. And then you'd be like, hold on. Then you'd read the article and be like, bitch, it's coming out January 29th. It's the first month of the year. Hey. It's not like 11 months into the year. It's not like it's coming out December of 2019.
Wait. Either way, Square Enix, with this shit pie,
they were a little off.
They were gonna lie either way. I would rather they be more truthful about their lie than to backpedal and be like, if we don't say anything, like, there's nothing. Like, we can't do nothing besides not buy your game outright,
I
think a lot of us
I'm with you. They were a little sneaky.
Yeah, they were
Trailer, and then, like, the reveal date.
And then, this is kind of trapped in the closet. Like, it pulled out its gun, and it was just waiting for us to. And it was just waiting for us to reveal the shadiness of it.
Okay.
So, like, when the release date came out, I said, okay, so did Square Enix just convince the whole world to add an additional month just to this year?
So is January now officially the end of the year?
I was like, wow, that is some diplomacy.
January might be the end of their fiscal year. You gotta remember that they're a Japanese company. Now, here's all I'm gonna say on the whole date issue and the this year thing, because I agree, it's a douchey thing to be like, it's coming out this year, and then like in the reveal trailer be like, actually it's coming out January 2019. Okay, there was an easier way that they could have like ended the trailer and then had somebody come out and be like, and we know we've been promising it this year, but we're actually going to ship it
like
1 month later.
Like, really, you'll be able really to get to it. Me. Like,
because it's probably just a production issue as far as actually being able to get all of them out. Because you realize that they're going to be shipping multi-region.
Yeah, I know.
All on day
well,
one.
Well, you know what?
It's not going to be a staggered release.
Don't make such an awesome game. Don't get fans. Okay. And then you won't have so much responsibility.
Because, no. like, it's probably just a logistic thing. Because, again, this is the first time that they're actually going to ship the game to all regions at the same time. Like, I know it's been a while, sis, but remember, when Kingdom Hearts 2 came out, first it shipped in Japan, and then, I think it was like 2 or 3 months later, or 2 months later, it shipped in the U.S. because of the localization. This is the first time that they're shipping it, one, Xbox and PlayStation, all regions same time. So I think they kind of bit off a little bit more than they could chew, thinking they could get all the production and shipping and all the localization ended up and rounded up, and it would actually ship in December. And they realized that, nope, in order to actually deliver it, it was going to take them another 30 days, and that's why it's January. But you're right. They should have just came out and said it instead of just rolling that date at the end of the trailer. Because I was expecting for them to say, like, Christmas.
Right. Oh, my God. Like, yeah, but...
That's what I expected. I expected it to be able to get it digitally Christmas
here's
day.
Here's how it felt to me. Okay?
So
all the trailers been coming out. The excitement's coming. I feel like Rachel Leah Cook, and she's all that. Freddie Prinze Jr.'s sister has just given me the makeover, and like Kiss Me's playing in the background, and I'm walking down these stairs because the inevitable meet cute between new pretty acceptable me and Freddie Prinze Jr. is about to happen, and then it rough cuts to not a teen movie where then the floor caves in beneath my feet and I'm no longer Rachel Leah Cook, but I'm now the $2 version, and I fall to my doom, and the meet cute doesn't happen, and I don't get to see
Your
face.
I love your descriptor here.
I'm just saying, like that is what happened when I saw like in my soul, and mm-hmm. I was like, oh hell no, mm-hmm. oh hell no, Square mm-hmm. Enix. Now granted, I mm-hmm. love me Kingdom Hearts, and as convoluted. Mm-hmm. As that fucking timeline is. And I mean, and I've played games with convoluted timelines. Like, Zelda,
yes,
come on.
Have.
Like, it's okay. Like, I'm in for the journey. I'm invested enough to commit.
Right.
But still, Kingdom Hearts timeline is so fucked up. Like, it is so messy. It needed to not have all the iterations after 2. And
long story short, you put money on it.
Yes. I'm gonna.
Okay.
I'm not super
Follow-up
happy
question.
About it.
Follow-up question. PlayStation or Xbox?
Since I believe all my other versions of Kingdom Hearts were PlayStation, I think I will stay true to the console that my originators were on.
Word.
But you're hurting me deep. And it's not just me, Square Enix, okay? Like, the level of abuse that I've had in my life, like, this is just, like, another thorn in my thumb. But, like, some people, like, that thorn is so deep. It's so tender. And we just needed you to come through with the cornbread.
Look, they're shipping the game.
We were looking for you to come through with the juicy cornbread, and you went to, like, BJ's.
Oh.
Like, we gonna eat the cornbread, but that's not
because,
what you promised
it's
us.
Cornbread.
It's cornbread. But it's not what you promised us. And we'll remember this. This year.
Remember this. This hard.
And I'm just...
This
year.
All year long.
And that's all I'm going to say. Like, it looks
okay.
fantastic.
Yes.
The opening song also totally can't wait to unpack all of that goodness. But my God, like, I feel like we as a consumer base, like, when something's not right, when a company comes out and says, you know what, we have to push back on this because, like, it's just not ready. Like, yeah, we're going to get grumpy about it, but for Bioshock Infinite, like, we were all pissed that they held off. But then how good was it when we finally got it?
You know, Irrational handled that completely differently. Like,
right.
They completely pulled out of doing PAX East that year and then released a statement as to why they were not coming
right.
to the
so
show.
If they weren't able to meet their deadline.
Because they weren't ready. Because they had to go back and they wanted to retool the game because the game right. wasn't what they wanted it to be. I don't think that this is the same situation because it wasn't that Kingdom Hearts 3 wasn't the game that they wanted it to be. I really just think that logistically for what they're trying to pull off, they needed more time. It wasn't like they were going back and completely retooling the game. So I don't think that you have to make a big deal about it, but really you should have addressed the, you know, just have somebody come out and be like, we know we said we're shipping this game in 2018, and that's not going to happen. But here's the deal. It's going to come out in 2019, but it's going to be January. If they had just done that,
I feel like they could have mitigated this and handled this way better.
Absolutely. But again, I think that there's also, you know, a little bit of culture clash in the just come out and say it as opposed to what they did. So I'm with you. Like, it was a shitty way to find out that it was coming out in January. Because I, like you, went immediately to, motherfucker, you said 2018. I know it's only 30 more days, but bitch, that's a new year.
So
I gotta put a different date on the checks that I write. It's a different year. Yeah, it's only 30 days, but it's a different year, son. The fuck? And then I was like, it's 30 days. It's not like, we said it's coming out this year, but it's actually coming out in spring 2019. Then I'd be like, no, we should all take pitchforks to the office. Let's go. But I'm like, it's 30 days. I'll give you 30 days. So, I've already given you, like, a decade. I can give you 30 more days.
Yeah. So I didn't want my angry.
Come on, man, Wreck-It Ralph. I get to play them in Wreck-It Ralph world. Like, I'm good. You got 30 days, Square Enix, but just 30 days. Don't come back with no shit. Be like, actually, it's February 15th.
Like, no, nope, no,
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 no.
No.
So, I did not want to get into a shit raid on it because my wallet will open. The one credit card that doesn't have the most on it will get hit with this charge. And I will play it and I will feel all the joy as if I was walking around Disney and in my favorite Final Fantasy games, which, I mean, I haven't played a Final Fantasy game since Final Fantasy 15, and we all know how I feel about that. So I do need a squeefix. Like, I'm hungering for one in the worst way. So this will satisfy both of those.
Right.
But like, you kinda did that sidestep and I'm not too happy about
so,
it.
So I'm just gonna put on the table. We're not gonna talk about it because we're gonna talk about it next week. But obviously, you know, I need to talk about the Destiny 2 expansion. Mm. I need to talk about Forsaken.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Because, I mean, I put money on it, but we'll talk about it next week because I have some shenanigans to call on it. But I'd like to go to our Blurreds of a Feather section, and before I do, I'm just going to say, Capcom is getting my money because I'm definitely getting Devil May Cry 5.
Okay.
Thank you for bringing my Dante back the way that he should always have been, and please don't make me play the whole goddamn game as Nero. Because then I will be mad and flip a table.
Did you have any thoughts about Dead or Alive 6?
I mean, I'm going to play it. Let's be real.
But I heard that a lot of people were like, hey, they're taking a creative sidestep a bit, and they're stepping away from the sexy to bring the brutal in.
So here's the thing. I think it's a good thing. So here's the deal. Like, Dead or Alive 5, Dead or Alive, the franchise, has always been one of those franchises for me that I felt like, because so many people got focused on the salacious nature of some of the character designs of the female characters, they forgot to focus on just how solid of a fighter it actually is. Like, DOA has a phenomenal counter system that really, to be good at the game, you really need to learn all the characters. You know, most fighting games, you need to learn three core characters, because pretty much everybody counters in the same way. So if you learn those three core characters, you can just run the gamut up and down the character roster as far as fighting. That's not the case with DOA. Everybody's counters are a little bit different. There are, you know, several characters that are similar in their fight style and approach, but even then, their character timings for counters are different. So it is a much deeper fighting game than a lot of people give it credit for. And it's because so many people got caught up in, you know, changing the age to 99 so that you had ridiculous boobs with really incomprehensible physics applied to them, right? And so I love the franchise. The salaciousness of it really didn't bother me because I liked the characters enough and I like learning the fight system enough that I was like, eh, whatever. Everybody likes boobs. Go ahead. Have your little bouncing boobies. Go ahead. Now, beach volleyball, the beach games, the photo games I never played, but I don't knock anybody for playing them. I mean, there's nothing wrong with some TNA.
Like, there ain't nothing wrong with some booty bumps and, like, sending random gifts to girls. And
like,
then
it's so silly, but it's so silly to me that I'm just like, yeah, a little bit of brainless fun is fine. And they are gorgeous characters, so, like, have your fun, okay? Just don't be pervy about it. Like, it's not like you could get anybody naked. They were in swimsuits.
Yeah, okay. Like, really, really thin strippies of fabric
but
over their
fine.
Nips and their
like
V.
That, to me, doesn't bother me if you're in the right setting. Like, you set up that this is a beach resort. These are all European, you know, for the most part, with the exception of Tina, characters. The standards for bathing suits in Europe are different. So I'm like, meh, that doesn't really bother me. Like, have your poses. It's not like it was really... The beach games never came off as pervy to me, okay? So, I'm just like, they're just stupid, silly fun. Go have fun. Like, I have played, you know, the bouncing butt game, and it actually, you know, getting the timing right to bounce right and not fall off is very frustrating. There are some, you know, mechanics in there. It's a solidly fun, stupid game to try and get girls to like you. That's fine. I don't have a problem with that. Okay? It's not like you're trying to sneakily sex girls, because right. That I would have a problem with. It's not like you're trying to trick anybody into being with you, okay? You legit have to put in a lot of effort to get a girl to say that she will be your partner in a game. So I'm just like, I actually kind of like the fact that it's not just like I walk up to Helena, I'm like, let's play volleyball together. And she's like, yeah, sure, okay. Like that would ever happen with just a random dude. Like, no, I have to put in work. First of all, I have to find the things that she likes. I have to give her the presents that she likes. I have to talk to her regularly. Like, I have to do all these things. And then if I do them all right after a couple of days, maybe she'll say yes and be my partner in a game. And so I'll get to see her in a different bathing suit or buy her a bathing suit. Like, I'm fine with that. But for the fighting franchise, I do think that they are, yes, taking a little bit of a creative license with the franchise. But when, you know, technically I think you're like 8 games in, no, probably like 9 because of all the beach games that you count in, right? You need to refresh your franchise. You can't just keep spitting out the same fighting games with just the same characters and be like, we put new costumes in. You've got to change up the mechanic a little bit. And so I think kind of taking a page from the Ninja Gaiden Black and putting a little bit more violence into the moves, because let's be real, like, it is a brutal fighting game. Every fighting game is brutal because you're fighting. There should be some brutality in some way of your game, but it's not like they're going, like, full-on Mortal Kombat. So from what I've seen, I'm down with it. Like, am I going to pre-order DOA? Probably not. Am I going to buy it? Yes. Am I going to pre-order Soul Calibur? Fuck yes. But that's because Soul Calibur is probably, if I'm honest, definitely in my top 20, possibly in my top 10 games. Because I go back and forth on whether it's Virtua Fighter or Soul Calibur as, like, my fighter in my top group. But I'm glad to see that fighters are getting focused on again. Because it feels like they just completely got blown away figuratively and literally by shooters. All right. And so what we got was like a half-assed, as you recall, Street Fighter.
Yep.
And then all of us in the community who are fighter game fans are like, what the fuck did you do? Fix this. You had Injustice 2 that came out, which was, you know, a bridge game, because it's a very good fighter. I give it a lot of credit. But updates to other fighting games like Killer Instinct, it's not a new fighting game. And we haven't had a new fighter in a while. And I think adding this mode onto DOA does give it a refreshed feel and makes it feel new, as opposed to just a more high-res update of an existing Dead or Alive game that I've played. But now let's do our blurbs of a feather.
All right.
So we're coming up on time here. But we're going to talk about Death Stranding for the rest of this podcast. Because I got to be honest with you, Panda.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't know what the fuck is going on there.
I don't think you're supposed to. So, and I'm not an expert.
Like, I tried. I watched that thing, like, over and over and over again. And I don't know.
I feel like, one, that the order of trailers that we've... Because I think we've seen about 3 trailers now.
Mm-hmm.
That this trailer that we just saw out of this E3 is probably the earliest. So I think, chronologically, this is the one you would want to start with to unpack what's potentially... And like I said, I'm not an expert, okay? Like, I just look at stuff and I try
but
to...
you are my Mulder.
I try to connect as many dots as I possibly can. And, I mean, even I am relatively stumped. But here's what I'm kind of taking away from what we are seeing. Because, I mean... We're finally seeing, you know, we had the hint of the female character, I think, in the second trailer.
Yes.
Because we heard the character say, "You still don't know who I am." And then Norma's turned his head to the figures in the sky. So we do have a relevance of male and female energies and potentially people in this mix. So I feel like we're dealing with time. I think this game has a lot to do with parallel timelines. I think we're going to see a lot of reference to, like, multiple world theories. Because, I mean, from what we're seeing now, the world has gone to shit.
Yeah.
Animal life is
definitely gone to shit.
There are these invisible entities that are attracted to sound. And literally, upon encountering one of these or having one of them touch you, you literally begin to instantly age. And I know that they talked a little bit about the, I'm trying to think what it was called. I'm blanking on it a little bit. But the something with falling in it. Because apparently when you go into this state, that's when you start to age in this game. It's taking a really interesting approach with the idea of death in this game. Obviously with a name like Death Stranding, clearly we're looking at elements of death in this. And I think that very much like in that whole dark souls or demon souls realm where... death doesn't mean the end of your game, that this element, which I can't, I'm blanking on what the name of it is. It's...
I don't know what it is, so I can't help
it's
you.
It's something falling. I don't want to say night falling, because I don't think that's right. But in this game, when you die, you don't actually, you know, very much like when you're in an arcade and you put your coin in and you die, you get the continue screen and it takes you back to a point right before you died. This game's not going to do that. Literally, this game is going to pretty much let you continue from right there. So they're playing around with that concept of, you know, life not being all of it. Like, it doesn't stop. Because I feel like a lot of people look at death like it's the final thing. And we don't know what happens when we die. And I feel like we're seeing a lot of games that want to play and subvert that expectation of, you know, when you fail, the game is over. It's like, oh no, failure happens continuously through this game. And I feel like the crater, because I think you saw the crater in this, in this trailer. And when the act of death happens and he comes back, and I'm using, I hate to say it, once again, I'm using air quotes here, but when he's returned, that crater is still there. So he has not been pulled back through time. Time is still occurring, and he essentially is still kind of occurring in that space. So there's a lot going on here. And I feel like I saw that people were talking about his necklace that he wears in it and how it relates to some part of the theory of relativity. So like I said, like we're playing around with a lot of big concepts. The big thing I want to kind of throw out there is, you know, yes, we've now seen this female, this blonde female character, who also has a really interesting necklace, if no one cared to look at that.
Oh, I did.
I have a sneaking gut feeling, and I could be completely wrong. You know, the fact that Norman Reedus's character, Sam, you know, in all these trailers, at some point inquires the baby and is then, like, kind of holding the baby in the sack on the outside. And then in that one trailer, the baby's, like, in his, you know, esophagus, giving the thumbs up, like, hey, we're good here.
Because Del Toro.
But yes, Del Toro. But I feel like this lady that we've now kind of seen, and this could be a cheap shot and I could be completely wrong. It wouldn't be the first time, won't be the last time. But, I mean, I feel like Sam's a very androgynous name. And if we're dealing with time and things not necessarily happening linearly, or things all happening all at the same time across a many span, that it'd be... I would not be surprised if this female that we've seen is Sam. And obviously, ladies can have babies. And because they are essentially the same person, I think their bodies are weirdly tuned right now. Like, I'm still trying to unpack all this stuff, because like I said, there's been a lot. There's a lot there. There's a lot not there. There's a lot they're not saying. And
there's so much.
There's so much. Saying. And I mean, and Kojima has been quoted several times of talking about this game having sticks and ropes, you know, and sticks being, you know, very basic mechanics that we see in these games, you know, the fighting mechanics, the stealth mechanics and stuff like that. But he talks about the ropes as being connections between people, you know. And I tend to think about, like, the red string of fate and how everything is tied. Like, things are tied to each other in these weird, unforeseen ways. And I feel that she, this woman, who she speaks to way too casually to Sam in that trailer. And I'm like, well, that's probably because, you know, she's talking to herself. And I'm so ready to have my mind blown, put back together, then blown up again, then pureed, and then served to my friends at dinner for this journey, because I think this is going to be a really interesting introspective to how we see life and death, and how this will be a great way for us to challenge our built-in preconceived notions to all of that and take away something completely foreign and new to us as a species. Because I feel like Kojima and Del Toro already kind of exist on two levels higher than the rest of us. Like, they've been interstellaring for years, and the rest of the world just has not caught up yet. Like, they're in the fifth dimension, and we're all still perceiving the third. And, like, we haven't even broken into the fourth space yet. And I think they're gonna take us on that journey to potentially begin to open that door. And, like, I'm confused, I'm upset, I'm happy, I'm sad, I am all these things all at once. And I shouldn't be, no one should be able to be all of these things. And I think that is the big piece to this puzzle, is this element of things all happening at the same time, all next to each other, under the veil of these, like, these invisible, like, walls that, like, we construct. Like, if we could just expand our minds and our essence. Like, it's see, I'm just getting all confuffled on it. But
yeah, you're getting fuffled. But here's the thing. Okay, so because we're just about all the time, I'm gonna do my little blurty thing. I'm probably not gonna play this game. I'm probably gonna watch you play the shit out of this game. Here's what I have, like, semblanced together, just very quickly. I agree that time is going to be a big, I think it's going to be a character in this game, because you can see from, like, the trailer at E3 when the ethereal being, I'm going to call it right now, walks and steps on the ground, wherever it steps, grass, like, very quickly sprouts up from the ground and then withers and dies. So I think being in close contact, and we also saw it in the last E3 trailer when the thing,
like, grazed, grabbed that the dude.
Guy, he, like, yeah, immediately aged, and his body, you know, we thought it was just like his essence was being sucked out. And that's
Timefall. That's what it's called. Ugh.
Okay, Timefall. But it's just that happens around it, right? Okay, so that's a thing. I think that the reason why Norman Reedus and different people like have a baby with them is because of that time thing. So like at one point in the trailer, you see when he's in the building and he's talking to someone, they're like, can you make it through the rain? And he's like, no, I'm surrounded. And he's like, all right, I'm going to make a go for it. And he takes this like needle and appears to inject himself with it. And then he taps on the bottle in front of him and it's a fetus, like he's waking it up. And it's that the fetus appears to be, at least to me, like the key, because that's when his little detector system turns on. So I think that there's a play going on between the umbilical cord and the babies and the things, because I think, like, somehow inherently babies, children, can sense these things where adults can't. And so that's why, like, the baby goes live and is full and is, like, actively looking at stuff, which most fetuses wouldn't be, because they typically don't have the ability to see shit. So they're only sensing things. So it gets tapping into
the existence. It's the canary of this. It's a space canary. Babies are space canaries.
I feel like the reason why they go live with that is so that if they get caught, because the guy mentions, like, yeah, sure, if you get caught, you'll come back, but they'll leave it. It'll destroy. It'll have a crater. I think that whenever the beings are able to get a hold of a little living thing and process it in some way, that there's a big bang experience type thing that happens, an explosion of time. And so that's why an area becomes completely desolate. And if there is a fetus, it runs through that rocketing of time and comes back.
Possibly.
So I think that the baby is a backup plan so that if I get caught by one of these things, I'll be rejuvenated. Okay, but even at that, it still doesn't explain the ghosty umbilical cord things in the sky that you can't always see and why they're preying on humans for whatever fucking reason. And it also doesn't explain, like, how in the hell Kojima lined up this lineup, because holy Jesus, I was not prepared for the woman at the end.
The original bionic woman?
To be Lindsay fucking Wagner.
Yeah, I know, right?
So like, you got Leia Seydoux, Mads Mikkelsen, Norman fucking Reedus, and the original goddamn bionic woman?
Yeah. And granted, there's still a whole bunch of characters that they haven't even announced yet. Like, we don't even know.
I full on expect Sam Jackson to be
in
this
movie. And we've got Del Toro in there as part of the Evil Corporation Bridges.
It's a goddamn video game. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's going on with Death Stranding. I want to know what's going on with Death Stranding. I don't know that anyone will ever know what's going on with Death Stranding.
I will.
I don't know that Kojima even knows what's going on with it. But
once I play it, I will know.
So, like I said, we got to wrap things up, but holy Jesus, was this a really exciting E3. I'm really mad that we weren't there.
Okay.
Like, this is one of the few years that I'm mad that we weren't there.
Well, they didn't invite us, so.
I know. But I would have loved to have actually got my hands on Jump Force. Obviously, Devil May Cry. I mean, there's a shit ton of other stuff that UB announced that we haven't talked about yet. We will on other podcasts and definitely on the site. I would have been, like, blowing up Bethesda's place because, first of all, Wolfenstein Youngblood. We're going to talk about that next week. But
are you surprised? Because we had old blood, so I knew they were going to go young blood or new blood or something like that.
But I wasn't expecting to be playing Blazkowicz's twin daughters.
Hey, a man like that procreates.
That's dope.
A man like that procreates.
But, like, I didn't expect that they would do a dual female lead Wolfenstein. That I never expected.
It's about time.
I'm with you. I'm just saying, I didn't expect it, so I'm pleasantly surprised. And I would have loved to have been able to do some gameplay on it and talk with the team about it.
So.
Anyway, we got a lot of stuff to talk about. We're going to be really passionate about it. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please make sure that you subscribe. You can get our podcast in iTunes, either on the desktop through the iTunes application or through the podcast application by searching for the Eshcast and subscribing. You can also get our podcast on Stitcher Radio, Vogue Network, Google Play, pretty much any place that podcasts are aggregated, you'll be able to find our show. So please subscribe, leave us a review, hit us up on social and let us know if you enjoy the show or you've got thoughts you want to share. You can find us on Instagram at ESH News. We're also on Twitter at ESH News, and we are on Facebook, facebook.com/Landavash. We'll have more video content and additional things coming to you over there. But please like our page, engage with our stuff, comment and share, because the more that you engage with our stuff, the more stuff we can put on the page. So please do so. You can also check out some of the other amazing things that the team is writing about and talking about on our site, electricsisterhood.com. If you enjoy our site, then please make sure to check out all of the other great content creators and writers that are part of the Esh family. That includes KBD over at B3Crew.com and his podcast, No Borders, No Race. That includes our homie Hamsterman2049 over at SmashRook.com and his live streams on Twitch, twitch.tv/Hamsterman2049. Definitely check those out every Wednesday at 9, streaming great games. One of my favorite humans on the planet, Phil's the Issue Guys, with Phil's recap and review on YouTube. Subscribe to his channel, folks. You will not be disappointed. And you can check out his entire archive on his site, issuesprogram.com. And last but certainly not least, our homies over at nerdcrave.com, keeping you up to date with all the stuff that nerds crave. Definitely make sure to check out their site, and because they talk about all kinds of stuff, comics, anime, manga, you name it, it's nerdy, they talk about it. We love building what we build for you and for you to engage with it and share it and just be part of our community and be part of our conversations. It's absolutely phenomenal. We appreciate you so much. We want to hear your thoughts on E3, so please hit us up on social, drop us an email, use the contact form on our website, whichever way you feel comfortable reaching out. Just let us know what you think. We'll share some of those thoughts in future podcasts. And it's time to wrap it up. So as always, I'm Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And until next time, titties.